Meditieren, Yoga, Joggen, nichts entspannt mich.
Echt? Mich entspannt meine Steuer total.
Steuer? Wie Finanzamt? Die Steuererklärung?
Ja, ich habe ganz locker über 1000 Euro zurückbekommen.
Hast du geheime Connections?
Nö, nur die Wieso-Steuer-App.
Wow, und das ist einfach?
Klar, die macht fast alles automatisch.
Plötzlich fühle ich mich so entspannt.
Hol dir dein Geld zurück. Tiefenentspannt mit Wieso-Steuer.
Stu does America.
I remember taping that open, and no matter how many times I tried, I could not get every piece of paper off that stupid desk. Every time there was always one left over. It was so annoying. But it's the history of this show. Very annoying. By the way, you can follow this show on YouTube, youtube.com/StuDoesAmerica. Be sure to hit subscribe and the bell for notifications. Ed Morrissey is here with a breakdown of what's going on in Argentina with Milei. That's a big, big development. We also have the latest in Donald Trump's war on drugs and those who bring them into our country. But we're going to start by doing economic chaos, exclamation point. Yes, that's what I mean, the media is telling us we are in a point of economic chaos. And it kind of feels that way at times, right? There is a lot going on in the economic world. And, you know, some of it is stuff that we've talked about for a very long time. Some of it are new developments. But, like, look at what's on the table right now. Trump administration posting notice that no federal food aid will go out on November 1st. Now, this is tied, of course, to the shutdown. And I'm going to talk to Ed Morrissey about this in a little bit. But, like, which way did this break? Do they blame Republicans? Because whenever something goes bad with food aid, you obviously have to blame Republicans. Or do you blame Democrats, who seem to be quite clearly responsible for this specific issue? Right? You might say they always argue for more money to go to food aid, which is probably true. However, with this particular situation, quite clearly they're the ones blocking the funding. Then we have Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent saying the U.S. will not be able to pay the military by November 15th amid the government shutdown. That becomes a real problem when our military is not getting paid, among other people. I've been talking to a couple of friends lately who work relation to the government, and they're saying, like, yeah, we've been told our next paycheck might not be there. You know, it'll come maybe eventually, but it's not going to be there when we expect it. And that means you got to really kind of like move things around if you're even fortunate enough to do that. Then we have Duffy, the transportation secretary, saying all air traffic controllers are wearing thin as the government shutdown hits day 26. Remember, the longest shutdown in history, I believe, is 35 days. So this is, we're getting up there, right? And it doesn't feel that way, I don't think, yet, because the media really hasn't been covering it like they normally do. They usually are constantly panicked and telling you about every sob story that every single mother who loses access to this program or to that program, or this person who doesn't get paid, or this person doesn't get paid. And they always show that as on the news constantly, because typically they're trying to pressure the Republican Party. Well, now that the Democrats are the one kind of doing this, it's a little more difficult. And so far, they have not chosen to go that route whatsoever. Obamacare sticker shock begins in open enrollment, meeting the shutdown deadlock. That is going to be interesting because I think it's November 1st these are released. And it's another pressure tactic the left is definitely trying to utilize. They're trying to say, OK, well, they're about to see these rates go up. We need to get back in negotiations. And once people hit the Obamacare site and they realize they have $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 less of their own money to pay for the health care that we're giving them, they're going to be very angry about that. Okay? They're going to be very upset that we're not giving, that you have not paid for enough health care for somebody else. You're a bad person. Did you know that? Did you know you're a terrible, terrible human being for not covering Bob down the street in his health care as he decides he doesn't feel like we're going to work? That's your responsibility, just so you're aware. So you could thank Bob for all of this. When he starts getting upset, they finally end the shutdown because Bob's upset. Then you got Trump gets a royal welcome in Japan. The China trade truce. Why would they put trade and truce next to each other in the headline? That's too hard to say. The hope's rising for that. That's positive. And it's funny because we're talking about all these chaotic things, all of this economic chaos going back and forth. Yet our markets are at their all-time highs. So it's fascinating to watch all of this stuff develop. Part of it might be that optimism for a trade deal in Japan. China's foreign minister holding a call with Rubio ahead of the Trump-Xi meeting. And, you know, look, Trump likes to make deals, big splashy announcements after these meetings. He doesn't like walking out of there and saying, we didn't really find anything, kind of a waste of time. It's not really his style. He wants to get to something. And usually he comes out, like last time he was like, I'm going to meet with Netanyahu. We solved Middle East peace. Like, that's what he likes to do. China hopes the United States can meet it halfway to prepare for high-level interactions between the two countries. Foreign Minister Wang Yi told U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio during a phone call on Monday, according to a Chinese readout. Chinese President Xi Jinping is in and U.S. President Donald Trump have a long-standing exchanges and respect each other. My main man, Wang Yi, said, and he called Xi and Trump's relationship the most valuable strategic asset in China-U.S. relations. That, again, a quote from Wang Yi. Let me make sure you understand. Wang Yi was the one who said that. And we have Canada. That situation's going on. Canada's Carney says he will meet China's Xi at APEC as well. He's open to Trump talks. You know who isn't open to Trump talks? Trump. Doesn't want anything to do with Canada talks right now. He's very annoyed at them at the moment. While Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney is open to further talks with the United States, he will reject any deal that is not in the best interest of Canadians, he told reporters on the sidelines of a summit in Kuala Lumpur. We are going to fight for Canadians, said the Canadian superhero Mark Carney. Now, this is all kind of on the base of a recent fallout. And I want to kind of break down this back and forth here for a second, because I think there are some really important points inside of this that we need to unpack. And this goes to Trump saying he will raise tariffs on Canada by 10% over Ontario ad. Now, if you've been watching the World Series, which I have, you've been watching the NFL games over the weekend, you may have seen this ad multiple times. It's an ad, you know, first of all, I think any ad run by a government should be illegal. You know, I just think that's just my personal preference. None of our tax dollars should go to pay for advertising anything. If you don't know that you need food stamps, we shouldn't be telling you in an ad that you need food stamps. It's my personal thing. That's how I am. Now, it's Canada's money here, so I don't really care. They can do whatever they want. But I will say this came from the government of Ontario basically trying to say, hey, tariffs are bad. Free trade is good. We should have free trade with the United States. And to make that point, we're going to use the voice of conservative icon Ronald Reagan. Now, let me give you the ad as played. This is what's been going on in media really quite a bit over the past week or two.
When someone says, let's impose tariffs on foreign imports, it looks like they're doing the patriotic thing by protecting American products and jobs. And sometimes for a short while it works, but only for a short time. But over the long run, such trade barriers hurt every American worker and consumer. High tariffs inevitably lead to retaliation by foreign countries and the triggering of fierce trade wars. Then the worst happens. Markets shrink and collapse, businesses and industries shut down, and millions of people lose their jobs. Throughout the world, there's a growing realization that the way to prosperity for all nations is rejecting protectionist legislation and promoting fair and free competition. America's jobs and growth are at stake.
Ontario, Canada. This message brought to you by a government that took tax dollars to tell you about a government policy that we should be doing on our own as a government so we can advertise it to you so you can hear about what we're doing as a government with your own money. That's us, Ontario. Now, look, this ad, I apparently Trump very much saw this ad because it was on a lot, I will say. And this created quite the reaction. The Reagan Library itself released a statement. This is what they said. The Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute learned that the government of Ontario, Canada, created an ad campaign using selective audio and video of President Ronald Reagan delivering his radio address to the nation on free and fair trade, dated April 25th, 1987. The ad misrepresents the presidential radio address, and the government of Ontario did not seek nor receive permission to use or and edit the remarks. The Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute is reviewing its legal options in this matter. We encourage you to watch President Reagan's unedited video on our YouTube channel. Now, President Trump saw that statement. He kind of reposted it on Truth Social and added this. The Ronald Reagan Foundation has just announced that Canada has fraudulently used an advertisement, which is fake, featuring Ronald Reagan speaking negatively about tariffs. The ad was for $75 million. They only did this to interfere with the decision of the U.S. Supreme Court and other courts. Tariffs are very important to the national security and economy of the USA. Based on their egregious behavior, all trade negotiations with Canada are hereby terminated. Thank you for your attention to this matter, President Donald J. Trump. So what's going on here? First of all, it quite clearly was edited, as I mentioned. Like there, it's not the entire speech. It's an ad. It's, you know, it's got fancy photos of beautiful Canadian mountains in them. So there were edits to it. And of course, Donald Trump is right to say that they did edit some stuff out, and so is the Reagan Library. I figure, though, it might be worth like going through a couple big chunks of this particular speech. First, let me give you a chunk where a lot of the stuff used in the ad came from. This is about 2 minutes of Ronald Reagan speaking about trade in 1987.
Throughout the world, there's a growing realization that the way to prosperity for all nations is rejecting protectionist legislation and promoting fair and free competition. Now, there are sound historical reasons for this. For those of us who lived through the Great Depression, the memory of the suffering it caused is deep and searing. And today, many economic analysts and historians argue that high tariff legislation passed back in that period, called the Smoot-Hawley Tariff, greatly deepened the Depression and prevented economic recovery. You see, at first, when someone says, let's impose tariffs on foreign imports, it looks like they're doing the patriotic thing by protecting American products and jobs. And sometimes for a short while it works, but only for a short time. What eventually occurs is, first, homegrown industries start relying on government protection in the form of high tariffs. They stop competing and stop making the innovative management and technological changes they need to succeed in world markets. And then, while all this is going on, something even worse occurs. High tariffs inevitably lead to retaliation by foreign countries and the triggering of fierce trade wars. The result is more and more tariffs, higher and higher trade barriers, and less competition. So soon, because of the prices made artificially high by tariffs that subsidize inefficiency and poor management, people stop buying. Then the worst happens. Markets shrink and collapse, businesses and industries shut down, and millions of people lose their jobs. The memory of all this occurring back in the 30s made me determined when I came to Washington to spare the American people the protectionist legislation that destroys prosperity. Now, it hasn't always been easy. There are those in the Congress, just as there were back in the 30s, who want to go for the quick political advantage, who risk America's prosperity for the sake of a short-term appeal to some special interest group, who forget that more than 5 million American jobs are directly tied to the foreign export business and additional millions are tied to imports. Well, I've never forgotten those jobs, and on trade issues, by and large, we've done well.
So that is, a pretty unequivocal, right? Like, he's absolutely against widespread tariffs and protectionism, right? Quite clear from that. A lot of Trump supporters on the internet kind of said, hey, wait a minute, that wasn't the whole speech. In fact, a lot of people put that clip out. What happened after that clip? They posted the next minute or so of that same speech. So I figured we should give you that as well, so you kind of hear both sides of it. Listen.
Well, I've never forgotten those jobs. And on trade issues, by and large, we've done well. In certain select cases, like the Japanese semiconductors, we've taken steps to stop unfair practices against American products. But we've still maintained our basic long-term commitment to free trade and economic growth. So, with my meeting with Prime Minister Nakasone and the Venice Economic Summit coming up, it's terribly important not to restrict a president's options in such trade dealings with foreign governments. Unfortunately, some in the Congress are trying to do exactly that. I'll keep you informed on this dangerous legislation because it's just another form of protectionism, and I may need your help to stop it. Remember, America's jobs and growth are at stake. Until next week, thanks for listening and God bless you.
First of all, doesn't that just seem nice? Like, doesn't that just seem like a nice period of our history? I don't know. It's just a little, the nostalgia is hitting me just a little bit for the 80s. I will say, You notice there, though, some different exceptions that he's making, right? It was unequivocal in the first trip clip. Certainly it was unequivocal in the ad. There, you hear a couple different things there. He's talking about the semiconductors, a specific industry. He talked about, you know, sometimes it does work for a short time, talking about specific interventions. And in that last clip, legislation that he was worried about that would stop him from potentially threatening tariffs during these negotiations. So maybe a little bit of both sides there. Now, how is Canada dealing with this latest tussle with President Trump? Here's that story quickly. Canada's strategy for dealing with President Trump was on full display this weekend, reinforcing the country's approach amid a turbulent trade relationship. Remove all irritants. Latest tussle involved an advertisement paid for by the Ontario government that used audio from Ronald Reagan. The ad will stop airing on Monday. Doug Ford, the Ontario Premier, announced on Friday after speaking with Prime Minister Mark Carney. So Carney's like, hey, we're trying to get some negotiations here. This is pissing him off. So stop running it. And I know I saw it this weekend. It's supposed to stop today. So that's where we go. So the question here is really like, who's right in this debate? You know, what does this actually mean? Because the speech was about actually placing a new tariff on Japan. Now, it was a targeted tariff. It was a small tariff, certainly compared to what we're dealing with today, but it was an actual tariff. And Ronald Reagan did have some tariffs during his entire presidency here and there. Now, he also spoke eloquently about free trade. And I think he outlined that in one of the clips we just listened to, where he said, we continue our overall push toward free trade and removing trade barriers. Because he knows all the negatives that can come about that, the overall tariff effect being very, very negative in his view. You look at that and you think about who's right and who's wrong here. Now, it is a bit mixed, right? It's not it's not perfectly clear. You know, Trump's criticism that they didn't air the entire speech or that it was edited, and the Ronald Reagan Library's criticism and their potential lawsuit against Ontario, I think is a little bit over the top. I mean, frankly, you're not going to be able to win a lawsuit because they took a bunch of clips out. Maybe they could on media rights, but I doubt that considering, you know, it's a presidential address. And so you kind of look at who's right here. Well, I mean, look. The Canadian basic point was Ronald Reagan was really for free trade and liked free trade. Trump's point is basically the opposite, right? That it was he was taking that out and he loved tariffs. At the end of the day, the Canadian government in this particular point is more correct than the Ronald Reagan Library is, in my view. I don't think it's particularly close. Reagan really was a free trade guy. But it is important to note that that speech was about a specific tariff going on. Now, Reagan did utilize specific tariffs like that. And so I don't know if, you know, certainly there's some point to be made here. And it's important to know the full context, which is why I kind of wanted to break it down and give it to you. What's more maybe important and interesting as to who's right and who's wrong here is the reaction by Trump and what he's reportedly doing. Now, what he's decided to do is put a new 10% tariff on. And I think that's bad for Trump and you if you think the tariffs are positive. And this is why. Donald Trump is the president of the United States. He has pretty broad tariff power to do all sorts of different things. He can tariff all sorts of products. He can tariff all sorts of industries. He can tariff different countries for specific reasons. Alongside of all of that is a different process for each bit of that, because the Constitution of the United States very specifically says Congress must deal with foreign duties and tariffs. So it's Congress's role to do this. What Congress said was, hey, thanks for all that power, Constitution. We don't really want to do most of it, so we're just going to hand that off to the President of the United States. We're using our power to give that power to somebody else. Is that constitutional? I actually don't think it is. I think that shouldn't have happened in the first place. But that being said, it's the way it's been understood for a long time. Another step beyond that is if you want to use that power from Congress, you need to use it by the letter of the law. Now, Congress gave that power to the president for very specific things, and he needs to do very specific things. Stuff like we need a study on this particular industry before we can implement a tariff, all sorts of different things like that. Well, obviously, Trump was like, I don't want to go through all that hassle because, first of all, the courts are going to screw with me. I'm gonna want to do all these things. I don't always just want to do a specific industry. I want to do an entire country. So he embraced a rule called IEEPA. It's an Emergency Economic Powers Act. And basically, he translates it as, I can tariff whoever I want, whenever I want, for whatever I want. Okay? Now, the rule itself does not even mention the word tariffs in it. It does not, has never been used for tariffs before President Trump. He believes that it gives him that power. What it definitely does, though, is require an emergency to do so. It is an emergency power. Now, he has argued that there are emergencies going on, right? Like, there's an emergency with China with the way that they're screwing with our with free trade. There's an emergency with Europe over this industry. There's an emergency on that. He's got a bunch of emergencies he's thrown out there. He's even talked about emergencies with the way our, you know, dairy and other things work with Canada. An ad, though, is not an emergency. If you're pissed off because someone ran an ad, that is not an international economic emergency. And because he's overtly talking about these 10% tariffs, and his people are, as the motivation for this, there's a good chance this actually hurts his own case in the Supreme Court to use IEEPA as justification for these. Now, I tend to think that the courts are going to turn this over anyway. I don't know that they necessarily need this additional motivation. But this is the second time, pretty clearly, that this was not an emergency economic issue that he was dealing with. The last one was another tariff he put on Brazil, which he basically said outwardly, I'm angry that they put Bolsonaro in jail. I'm pissed off about the way they're handling that, so I'm putting a 50% tariff on them. Now, you might think that's justified. You might think the Bolsonaro treatment is unfair. You might think that ad was unfair. But what definitely is not is an economic emergency that activates an act like IEEPA. It's never been used for that at all. And what he's doing is weakening his own case when it comes to tariffs. Now, I don't happen to be a fan of tariffs, so I, you know, kind of would like them to go away, at least in this sort of wild form that we've seen them recently. I'm not really on board all that much, even with Reagan in the clip, when it comes to specific tariffs. I'd really like it to be as little as possible. For the extent that they're used at all, I'd like them to be used as elements of a negotiation that lead us to freer trade. Now, I'm a little old school on that. I know, not everybody's there anymore. I'm more of that Reagan-era economic policy guy on that particular issue, and I get that. But even if you are for tariffs and you want them to go forward, the last thing in the world you need are weak justifications by the government to be able to put in new tariffs, because they're going to be able to attack those things pretty easily and say those are not economic emergencies. Now, what might happen is just those get overturned and others are able to stay. It's very possible that could come out of this. But it is a very it's a shaky ground we're walking on when you're blaming an ad for a tariff increase. It's something that you need to consider. And I think President Trump probably, they go through this. But, you know, a lot of times it is, he's being attacked, and he's being attacked all the time. And his normal response to attack is to fire back and to use everything he has in his arsenal to go back at who's coming after him when he believes it's unfair. That's one of the things that I think a lot of people love about Donald Trump, right? Like, this is who he is. This is what we voted for. It's all of that. People say that all the time online. It's one of the most searched term or most quoted term on Twitter, which is like, I voted for this, right? If you voted for this, though, this one in particular is a little on the weaker side, and it could wind up weakening that entire case. But anyway, they're stopping the ad anyway because they're terrified of Trump, and that might be very well what his actual point was. To my knowledge, they didn't actually implement the tariffs, so he could probably, now that they pulled the ad off the air, pull back on that and avoid any of these troubles, which might be the smartest way forward. And this brings me to the most central point, the most important point of anything that when it comes to Canada, which is go Blue Jays. Lord, please don't give the Dodgers another championship. The Toronto Blue Jays, America's team. I looked at some stat. 47 of the 50 states are online, with what they're posting and stuff, are supporting the Blue Jays. Even in the middle of a fight between us and Canada, that's how annoyed people are at the Dodgers buying every single player on the planet. So, who cares what happens with the tariffs? Let's just make sure we get a World Series trophy to America's team, my team. the Toronto Blue Jays. Ed Morrissey joins us next. Now, sometimes when I really have a big rooting interest, I will go on Prize Picks and I will just load up combinations of players of the team I want to lose, because I feel like I'm just going to have bad. Like, I'd rather, if my team's going to lose the game, at least I get some satisfaction out of Prize Picks. Prize Picks makes everything more fun, I will say. We make decisions every day, but on Prize Picks, right decisions can actually get you paid. And this time of year is perfect because we've got football in full swing, we've got the World Series, we've got the NBA season heating up. It's the best time to have a few takes that you feel really good about and take advantage of them. I was in the app the other night looking at some of the NBA stuff. You got Luka Doncic stuff. They had Josh Allen. You go through all the players, see whether you're going to go more or less than a specific stat total. Build up your lineup in daily fantasy sports, made very easy. If you want to go all in on one player, Prize Picks now lets you stack the same player up to 3 times in the same lineup. You get fast and secure withdrawals, and it's available in more than 40 states. It's just a great way to keep connected to the sports that you love. Download the Prize Picks app today. Use the code STU. Get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. The code is STU. Get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. On Prize Picks, it's good to be right, and go Blue Jays.
Unsere Empfehlung für deinen Podcast? Frisches Obst und knackiges Gemüse von Aldi. Immer gut, immer günstig, immer vielfältig. Kurz gesagt, frische für alle. Zum Aldi-Preis. Diese Woche Zespri Sangold Kiwi. Das Stück für nur 55 Cent. Oder dunkle Tafeltrauben. 500 Gramm für nur 1,79 Euro. Entdecke jetzt viele weitere Angebote in deiner Aldi-Nord-Filiale. Und weiter geht's. Einfach lauschen und genießen. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
I want to bring in Ed Morrissey. He is the host of The Ed Morrissey Show and managing editor of Hot Air. He has a new piece over there right now. It's Argentina Hands Milei, A Stunning Victory, Mandate for Reform. Be sure to check that out. Ed, thanks so much for coming back on, man. Good to see you.
Well, thanks for having me. Appreciate being on with you.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I appreciate your coverage on Argentina as well. And what kind of did seem like a bumpy road for Milei, we were hearing beforehand that things might not go his way, that everyone had turned on him, and everybody seemed to have gotten this completely wrong.
Well, I think that it certainly helped that the U.S. intervened to stabilize the Argentinian peso last week or week before last. Mm-hmm. And I think that certainly would have helped Milei in this election. Now, we did that for very good reasons. We did that for our own interests as well as for, you know, the interests of an ally. But yes, I think that what people are looking at here is that they've had several decades of Peronista type policies, and it's created a complete disaster in Argentina. And I think that they're willing to give Javier Milei a little more leash to actually lay out the rest of his reforms. And I think it shows that the deep dissatisfaction that people had with the political establishment pre-Milei and their unwillingness to go back to it, as well as the fact that maybe there's some light at the end of the tunnel, or at least they're perceiving some light at the end of the tunnel through his, you know, very new, almost revolutionary fiscal policies.
Yeah, bringing the chainsaw to the party. They are saying now 41%, it looks like, of the seats he's going to get, which is about double what they had before. Again, this is a guy that we were told just a couple weeks ago it looked like he might lose. And let me back up a little bit here, Ed, because I had, you know, watched this really closely because as a fan of conservative and libertarian fiscal policies, I really wanted this to work. Like I am very much invested in Argentina's success here because I want them to actually implement these policies to give us maybe a pathway for us to have a better future. And my impression of that, not just by reading conservative sources, but my mainstream sources as well, is that this was really working really well. Like, they had all sorts of improvements. People could find sense. You know, we had more housing supply. Inflation was going down. Lots of really positive changes. I did multiple monologues on all the good things that were going on there. And then a few weeks ago, all of a sudden, we're stepping in to dump $20 billion into their economy to stabilize what they say could be a fiscal crisis. Do we have any idea what's the truth here? What happened?
Well, clearly there was some sort of crisis. We wouldn't have intervened with the Argentinian peso if there hadn't been some concerns about that. Donald Trump also lined up some investments that will be made in the economy. I think it's about a $40 billion package, $20 billion of which was, I mean, this is rough from memory here, but I think $20 billion of it was a currency intervention. And the other $20 billion are, you know, pledges for greater investment. So clearly there was an issue there. And we kind of expect this, right? Because when you make this sharp of a change, when you cut into austerity, or when you have austerity programs that cut so deeply into decades of government social spending, you're going to run into these issues. You're going to have investors that start losing confidence. You're going to have people that are starting to dump your currency, that sort of thing. And I think that what was part of that also was the fact that people might have thought that Milei had run out of gas, because that's what you kind of expect. You'd expect some sort of a backlash to these, you know, very different policies being put in place. And they may have just anticipated that the voters were going to go a different direction. That may have also contributed to some of the instability around their currency. But, you know, the markets are responding strong today. And Argentina's stocks, bonds, they're all up today. People, his re-election, or it's not his re-election, but the expansion of his legislative footprint has created a lot of optimism for what's coming up for the next few months. So I think maybe some of that was just pessimism on the basis that he wasn't going to be able to win an election on this thing. I mean, don't forget, Buenos Aires had local elections in which his party didn't do very well. And I think that may have spooked some investors in September.
Yeah, that does seem to be part of it. I know it's interesting to kind of see how this fits into Trump's policies, right? Like, there's criticism at the time where they said, oh, well, what's America First about this? To me, if you can help out an ally, honestly, for a dollar amount that we throw away building bridges to nowhere or whatever we do with $20 billion these days, it seems to me to be a pretty good investment. And I think helping allies is a positive. I kind of wish we'd be a little bit more like this with Canada, certainly the conservative leadership of Canada. I wish we were a little more friendly to them. But I mean, is this consistent with America First?
Well, I mean, Donald Trump is the arbiter of that, right? So, I mean, we have to go to Donald Trump because he's the one who defines this sort of thing. But yes, I think that there are strong American interests in here. And I'll say it's not just the fact that Argentina is an ally, although that's certainly good enough. But it's also that Donald Trump is trying to push China and, to a certain extent, Iran out of the Western Hemisphere. This is part of the reason why we're going so aggressively after Venezuela, and the narco traffic that's coming out of Venezuela and Colombia is... part of that is a display of strength to get China to back off from the Western Hemisphere. Mm. And I think China really wanted the Peronistas to win this because they want to swing that government away from the U.S. and create a more hostile atmosphere for us here in the Western Hemisphere. So, yeah, $40 billion to keep pushing China out of the region. That is a really wise investment, even just for that reason alone, let alone, you know, to help out the people of Argentina, who are our friends. And we want to make sure that they have a stable economy down there, because it will eventually benefit us as well. So, yes, I think it's America First.
Let's switch gears to the dysfunction we have at home, which, of course, is always plentiful. We have the shutdown going on right now. And I don't know, like, my view politically on this so far, Ed, has been basically this has been better than the typical shutdown for Republicans as far as the reaction goes, because, of course, the Democrats are the ones out of power here. So typically the out of power party seems to get blamed for this. So far, it's been kind of middle. It seems like most of the polls I've seen have been maybe a slight pointing the finger toward Republicans for the blame, which is inexplicable to me. But still, that's better than they normally do on this stuff. I do wonder, though, are we close to that turning around? We have the Obamacare subsidies that are going to start hitting people. There's a lot of talk about food stamps, EBT benefits that are going to be going away from people. I've talked to a couple people that I know who are, you know, maybe working with the government and saying, well, this is the first week I'm not going to see a check. When this stuff happens, do people turn on Democrats or they turn on Republicans?
Well, I think you can look at the AFGE. This is the largest federal public employee union for Washington that there is, right? 820,000 members, 820,000 federal bureaucrats belong to the AFGE. This is their union. This morning, the union came out and said, Democrats need to vote for the continuing resolution and put an end to the shutdown. They're tired of having federal workers' livelihoods at risk. Mm. Now, this is not a pro-Trump union. This AFGE has at least two lawsuits against the Trump administration trying to stave off Russ Vought's reductions in force edicts, right? They're challenging those in court. And I think that they're worried that those challenges aren't really going to hold up, and they are preparing to get to lose on that. So the sooner you can get the shutdown over, the better. Now, they're blaming Democrats for not voting for the continuing resolution. And NBC News is where I picked this up. I think that the mainstream media is picking up on that. And I think that the pressure is going to start building for Senate Democrats to throw in the towel, vote for this CR, go back to the bargaining table. And at this point, you're going to probably need another CR, because that's the CR that's on the table runs out on November 21st. And there's a lot of bargaining that has to go on to get an omnibus bill passed in Congress to get to the rest of the budget. So my guess is that Chuck Schumer is now going to be under a lot of pressure with the federal employee union bearing down on him and blaming Senate Democrats for holding it up. That, I think, is the big key.
Do you think there's any folding on this? Do they give the Democrats something so they can go back to their people and say that they've won? Everyone can walk away and say that they've won. And I mean, usually that's the way this ends, right? Like, there's some little concession and everyone kind of walks away and argues that they won the thing. Is that what's going to happen here?
Well, I mean, I don't think so in this case, because this is sort of flipped on its head. In previous shutdowns, the demand has been that the people who are pressing for the shutdown agree to a clean CR, and it's the people who are causing the shutdown who want a bunch of negotiations, right? And that's usually Democrats wanting the clean CR. And this time, Democrats don't want the clean CR. It leaves Republicans with really hardly any exposure on this. They can just say, hey, if you want the shutdown to end, vote for the clean CR and we'll start negotiations. That's been Trump's line. He's held to it. So no, I don't think that there's going to be any reason to offer a concession to get to the clean CR. Now, once you get a clean CR passed, I think obviously there's going to be a lot of horse trading that's going to go on, some of which we probably won't like. But that's the nature of budget negotiations anyway. And Republicans actually have some fear about the ACA subsidies, Obamacare subsidies, going away at the end of the year, because it's going to feel like a tax increase. And I think that they're a little skittish about that. And they may want to do some horse trading to allow those to stay in place, but to make some cuts in other places.
I totally fear that this is where we're going with that, because it just feels like there's not like a, you know, like Trump's really good at a lot of things, and he does, you know, he's very good at pressuring, you know, groups for what he really wants and getting what he wants on those things. You know, he's just not passionate about the spending thing like a lot of conservatives are. He just doesn't care that much about it. So he doesn't go and pressure and say, no, we need less, you know, less subsidies, fewer dollars spent. He doesn't have that like gut fire for that stuff like he does, let's say, the border. And because of that, he kind of leaves this opening for Republicans to just kind of give in on this stuff, whatever feels good at the moment. And now we have, it feels to me, there's no Malay party here. It's everybody pushing the opposite side when the conservative position is a continuing resolution, continuing the ridiculous levels of spending we're already at. I don't know where we go from here. I'm a little scared of what's in the future.
Yeah, Donald Trump has never been afraid of debt. That's the problem, is that Donald Trump doesn't really want to address a debt crisis, in large part for the reason that neither Republicans or Democrats want to address it. It's not an acute issue at the moment. They can kick that can down the road. It gets worse the more you do that. And Javier Milei, to your point, recognized that and said, this is the moment we've got to address. We got to address this massive debt crisis that's going to land on top of us. We have to cut everything back. We've got to impose an austerity budget. And he's being rewarded for that, which I hope will teach Republicans and Democrats a lesson here in the United States. But yes, it's not reached an acute crisis level here in this country, because we haven't had the hyperinflation that type of thing creates. And I don't want us to get to that. The problem is that Donald Trump doesn't want to put his presidency at risk in order to impose an austerity budget in the way that we see it, in the way that Malay sees it. And he's willing to trade those things off because he isn't really all that concerned about debt, which is a problem. And it's frustrating. But that is pretty much business as usual in Washington, D.C., too.
It's very true. I think we could use a little less Schumer, a little more Malay, but we'll see how that goes here. Ed Morrissey,
amen.
Host of the Ed Morrissey Show, managing editor of Hot Air. Be sure to check out his new piece. It's called Argentina Hands Malay, a Stunning Victory and a Mandate for Reform. Ed, really appreciate all your analysis. Thanks so much for coming on the program.
Thank you, sir.
The United States is going to send an aircraft carrier strike group to the Caribbean in an escalation of boat strikes. Pete Hegseth said Friday the U.S. struck a boat allegedly carrying drugs in the Caribbean. This is for the third time in like a week. Now, this is going on more and more often. He's talking about these boats that are supposedly bringing drugs to the United States. There's no reason for me not to believe that these are drug dealers or potentially drug transport ships. I know one of the Colombian politicians said one was just a fishing boat. But that's, of course, they're going to say that. It's hard to know. And that's one thing I wish we had a little more information on, is what the story is behind a lot of these situations. But I know this is a big priority of both Trump and Hegseth and Rubio to make sure this stuff does not come in. I don't think it's going to be coming in as boat. Usually when you're boating and people start blowing your boats up from out of the sky, you stop boating. So it's a belief on my part. So I do think that that is going to stop. The question is, of course, did this just come over land now? And that's going to be a whole other thing we need to watch. But the border is certainly in better shape than it was before. Finally, we also have the dumbest person in Congress, Eric Swalwell, demanding any 2028 Democratic candidate to vow to destroy Trump's White House ballroom project. He says any 2028 candidate worth his salt will come in here and say, I will knock down this $300 million beautiful building out of spite, because that's how I will govern. And that's supposed to make you more popular inside the Democratic Party. The hilarious thing about it is, of course, it probably will. It probably is the right political thing to do, to knock down a $300 million structure for absolutely no reason whatsoever, as long as you're standing up to Donald Trump. So good job, Eric Swalwell. You stumbled upon yet another successful Democratic tactic. I want you to imagine what it would be like to start your day with a tea that's actually worthy of the moment. Kindred Harvest. They craft whole leaf teas with real, honest ingredients that are as close to nature as you can get. There's no dust, there's no mystery powders, there's no strange aftertastes. We're talking just like leaves, flowers, roots, spices, all the stuff that tea's supposed to be made out of. And they unfold in hot water in the way that they're meant to. These are great teas. You're going to love them. The bags are plant-based, so you're not like, you know, steeping plastics or putting any glue into your cup. And because everything is blended and packed here in the U.S., there is real intention and care behind every flavor. Whether you're looking for something bright and awakening in the morning or calming and grounding at the end of your day, Kindred Harvest has blends designed to support your energy, your rest, and your well-being. This is a tea that respects your time, your health, and the ritual of slowing down, even if it's just for 60 seconds in the middle of your day. So stop trusting China with your family's health. Choose American quality. Choose Kindred Harvest, cultivating goodness daily. Go to kindredharvest.co, kindredharvest.co. If you use the code STEW, you'll get 20% off now. The code is STEW for 20% off at kindredharvest.co, kindredharvest.co. Okay. So here's what happened. You ever get that moment where you go to grab your keys and you drop them and then you pick them back up and then you go over to the lock and you go about to try to put it in the hole and then it drops again and you're like, I have the worst luck. No, you don't. There's somebody with much worse luck, because a person was walking across a field, a soccer field, and they were hit by a plane that was crashing. I mean, look at this. This is the soccer field. This is the plane sitting in the soccer field. They were walking their dog across the soccer field. And you think to yourself, like, wait a minute. Why wouldn't they just move out of the way, right? Like, I mean, the plane, you're going to see it coming from a long way away. Apparently not. They didn't even hear it coming because they're deaf. A deaf woman survived somehow being hit by a plane that crashed into her as she walked her dog. By the way, serious injuries, but the dog is okay. Looks like she's going to make it too. Thank God.